You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The nonpartisan primary election for the superintendent of public instruction, Wisconsin's top education post, it is 1 week away. Seven candidates are running in the primary ahead of the April 6th general election. Next in our series of interviews, it's Sean Hendricks, a former assistant director at the State Department of Public Instruction and former director of Governor Evers' Milwaukee office. What do you want to know about her priorities for public schools in our state? It's 800-642-1234. Sean, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for this opportunity. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Let's start with what you want, why you want this job. Why do you want to be Wisconsin's next state superintendent?
So I believe that I possess the experience, the education, the knowledge, and the disposition to close the achievement gap so that we can close the other gaps that are plaguing Wisconsin. Gaps such as the highest incarceration rate, the biggest gap in employment and unemployment and poverty, health disparities, all of that can be solved if we deal with education and give all students the right to a fully funded, equitable education.
How would you address Wisconsin's racial and economic disparities that are huge, that are vast, that divide student achievement across our state?
Absolutely. So a lot of it has to do with resources. Some of it has to do with our teaching core. And the other part has to do with our curricular choices and evolving parents. So as it relates to our funding, right now, we fund our schools inequitably. It's based on property tax values. And as such, some schools receive more funding than others. And our most neediest students don't receive the funding that they need. In the Vincent versus Voigt lawsuit, our chief justice has said that Wisconsin was failing in its obligation to educate students who live in poverty, students who have disabilities, and English language learners. The first thing that I'm going to do is set up a task force on school funding reform, and not the usual task force with a lot of, big people who have large roles. We are going to set up a task force with everyday people, with representatives from the rural, urban, and suburban areas, with parents, teachers, administrators, and businessmen on there to really look at our old tax formulas and come up with new ways. Now, the good thing about it is the Association on Equitable Funding has conducted quite a few research briefs on this, and they have put forth recommendations. And so my task force members are going to look at these recommendations and come up with their own recommendations, and we're going to take that to our elected officials. I have formed what I call my Bill of Rights for Wisconsin students. And in this Bill of Rights, it clearly articulates what each of our students from K-3 through 12th grade will receive in their educational experience. Things such as early childhood education, which is very important. We know that students who experience early childhood education have a greater chance of reading on grade level by grade 3. In addition to that, our Constitution says that all of our students are supposed to receive a well-rounded education. And our legislature has defined a well-rounded education as not only our content areas, reading, writing, math, science, and social studies, but also our fine arts.
And I want to, I just want to pause here on your Bill of Rights, because you mentioned K-3. Do you look at, early childhood as K-3 and K-4, and how would you spread that around Wisconsin?
Yes. K-3 and K-4 is early childhood, and that would be funded through our new funded formula that I was telling you about.
Okay, yeah. Sean, when you look at the pandemic and the friction that we have, some students virtual, we have some schools totally in person, a mix of the both, how would you see it? What do you think schools should be doing in order to hold instruction virtually?
So I believe that schools have been doing the best they can. This pandemic came along without any notice, obviously. Our teachers had to pivot to virtual learning without training or any advanced preparation. You know, I believe that as we talk about returning all of our students to school, we need to follow one of my Bill of Rights, which says that students shall receive instruction by various modalities, face-to-face, blended, and virtual. And because of some of our students, like my son with special needs, may not be ready to go back to school because they have pre-existing conditions, or even when we think about students who have recently had a liver transplant and they're taking immune suppressant medications, their parents may not want them to go, but there are some students that are able to go. We need to have all three forms of instruction available. And in addition to that, we need to make sure that we equitably fund our schools so that they have PPE and all the materials that they need. Because once again, we don't equitably fund our schools currently. So we don't want a school to open up and they don't have the materials. But ultimately, I think that that's a decision that parents and teachers ought to be involved in and making, because they are the ones who are closest to our children.
We're talking with one of the seven candidates running for state superintendent. Sean Hendricks is here, a former assistant director of the state DPI and former director of Governor Evers' Milwaukee office. What questions do you have for the candidate? What do you want to know about her qualifications, her positions on issues regarding public education? 800-642-1234. Sean, how would you address, here in the pandemic, children falling further and further behind, some kids not ability to even connect due to broadband issues, or parents who need to work, child have to be self-directed at home? How do you catch these kids up?
So in my Bill of Rights, I also talk about making sure that we have additional options to meet the needs of students who have fallen behind by forming partnerships with community-based organizations to provide after-school programs or additional academic support. That academic support could be virtual as well. However, I understand for our urban areas, that is a problem with broadband, and that's something we need to work on.
Okay, so after-school support. In terms of summer school, what would your approach there? Some parents have been wondering, will there be summer school?
So I think that's a good idea. When I was district administrator here in Milwaukee, we had something similar to a community school where not only did we provide after-school academic services, we also had services during the summer and during spring and winter break.
When you look at the schools, and as you've been talking about the funding formula, which schools should receive more funding?
As I stated previously, those schools that serve students who have high numbers of children who live in poverty, students with disabilities, English language learners, and then also we need to consider weighted funding for our urban school districts who have densely populated areas for students, and our rural school districts where there's more sparsely populated students.
Let's bring in Ron now in Madison. Hi, Ron.
Hi. Each student needs to be resuming education at the grade level where they can succeed. 85% probability of success, not based on age. There needs to be a comprehensive statewide exam that covers all the essential areas so that a student can actually succeed in school, graduate, and go on to a successful life.
Ron, thanks. What about standardized testing to place the students? Sean?
So I believe that, there are two purposes for standardized tests. In the state, we need to test our students like in grade 3, 8, and 10 to see how the state is doing and meeting the needs of our students. The other type of test is formative assessments, and those assessments are used by teachers to drive instruction and to figure out whether or not our students are learning the content that has been presented. That was very important when I was a district administrator at a school where we increased student achievement from 30% of the students who were reading on grade level to 70% of the students who were reading on grade level. And this was a district where 100% of the students were students of color and 99% qualified for free and reduced lunch. So we have to be very careful why we're using assessment and what that information is used for. Once again, I maintain that it should be formative assessment should be used to form decisions about instruction, and then the summative assessment should be utilized so that the state has an idea of how our students are performing.
And we're out of time. Sean, thank you for joining us here on the Ideas Network.